I'm happy to be joined right now by Mr. Dave Dejayak from the Observer Dispatch. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good to be here.
Teen All-Stars.
Yes.
Still going.
Still going strong as ever after 20 years. It's we had a great breakfast yesterday morning for the kids and their parents and family and teachers and coaches and a lot of other supporters who joined us it's a really good time. It's a lot of work and yesterday was the culmination and was just a lot of fun.
Now, what's the process for a team to get nominated and then selected for the All-Star?
Well, the process actually begins. We actually begin, everybody said, well, you don't have to do it again for another year, but actually it's 9 months.
Yeah.
Because we begin the process usually start thinking about it in January and don't really act on anything until toward the end of February. Then in March, that's when we kick it off. We solicit nominations and basically pretty simple criteria for nominating. Has to be a high school senior, mm-hmm. an area high school senior. And nominations could really come from anywhere. We've had nominations from coaches, teachers, administrators, clergy, volunteer leaders, and parents. And they come from all the sources and they have to have a letter of nomination from the nominator. And then we ask we need a listing of activities and school activities and outside school activities. Academics play a role. Everything plays a role. That's the thing. It's not, these are not, although the majority or a large part of the All-Stars are academically sound young people.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the sole basis. We've had teen All-Stars whose grade point average might be a B, but they might be active in church. They might be active in the community. They might be active on say the Boilermaker mm-hmm. committee. They might be active on the Red Cross or the Heart Run. They hold down a part time job as
right.
a result too, and all round good solid young people. I mean, let's face it, we're not all brain surgeons either.
Certainly not. Not here at least.
But some of the hardest working people in this community, are not Rhodes Scholars.
Yeah, but they're hardworking.
Yeah. And they're good citizens. They contribute a great deal in many ways to the community. And that's what we're looking for in our young people. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
The four judges who are selected every year, We don't do it in house, simply because we want the judges to be from the outside, usually community leaders mm-hmm. in the area, and keep it independent of ourselves doing that. I usually drop off the nominations and run
because
we get a stack of them, and it's intensive. It's very, very difficult. Obviously we look through all the candidates ourselves, and when you say, well, how do you pick 30 kids out of more than 100 who almost every one of them qualified?
Yeah,
it's tough, but they do it, and it's a very difficult process for them, I'm sure, and we enjoy doing it.
Operation Sunshine going on this summer. You guys
yes,
starting we, you're we, starting we, to get that going.
We initiated the campaign. We kicked off the campaign a week before Memorial Day, a little bit earlier this year, because we generally like to have it wrapped up around July 4th, it might be a little tougher to do that in these times, but we'll keep it going until we do. But there's a great need out there. There's a great need out there in the camperships. The agency leaders have told us that they've seen a rising need, and to their credit, they've made changes so they can kind of stay within their budget.
Right.
Everybody's cutting.
It's tough. It is tough.
Everybody's cutting.
The last couple of years, yeah, Yeah, except for government. Except for the government, they're doing all right. And, you know, that's a great, you bring that up. And the County Ledge, you guys came out with an editorial about the legislators cutting four positions. And it was a very strongly worded piece, I thought. It said, you know, shame on you, pretty much, for only doing really a token cut to the County Ledge.
Yeah, six had been recommended. We had recommended 10, and we stand by that. We think it should be 10. Of course, there's all kinds of arguments as to why it can't be 10.
Yeah.
But they came down with 4.
It didn't seem like it was like a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Like, what's 4 going to do? Not much. There's no real overhaul in the County Ledge, in my opinion. We got to shrink the government.
Well, you know, there are efforts underway in different municipalities to try that, and it is different. The change is difficult for people.
Yeah.
And no matter what business they're in,
our
business,
absolutely.
Any business, change is always difficult. And government, costs of government have gotten so out of control. And, you know, when a private business is told when you're told or I'm told or you're told to cut back, you need to find a way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you don't, you're going to lose your job probably, or somebody's going to lose their job.
And you just need to find a way to do it. In government through the years, and there, you know, a lot of them are starting to come around and realizing that, wow, we really do need to do this. It's difficult because, you know, you're threatened, the threat is always that, you know, we got to cut your services.
Yeah.
Well, you got to find a way to maintain a level of government that people can afford. And that's tough. And consolidation, which we've long supported, it's finally starting to happen in nooks and crannies.
I think that the ball is starting to roll with towns and villages consolidating service. Well, Yorkville really started everything going with looking into merging their police department with the sheriff and have the sheriff patrol their streets. Then Utica, I'm hearing, is going to be jumping in the conversation to talk about, what can we do? I know Tim Julian released a statement saying he would support the Utica Police Department merging or taking over the patrol of Yorkville.
Yeah, you'll hear a lot of...
I don't know about the Utica
You'll hear a lot
issue.
Of proposals during campaign season.
Yeah.
There's always a big difference between what you hear in campaign season and what actually happens.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens there, but...
I'm looking forward to campaign season. And we've already kind of hit it, it seems like. It's earlier and earlier every year. It started really two months ago.
It'll be an interesting one.
And I love it.
Yep.
I have something to talk about then. You know, every day I wake up, I'm like, let's see what foolishness happened now. And it's HSBC buildings, taking over the conversation everywhere. Do we knock it down? I think people are just, they don't really know the options and what goes into the options of this building. It's structurally sound. It's they said it's not going to fall over, so they can't take it.
Well, Councilman McKenzie made some good points the other night about exploring more options, I think.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to happen. We don't need another surface parking lot in the city. We have quite a few surface parking lots. I think that, when you start knocking down some of the larger buildings downtown, it's kind of a demoralizing thing on top of everything else. And if the building is structurally unsound that's one thing, but if it can be rehabilitated, this building that we're sitting in.
Yeah, this was, and this is what the Jerome Councilman brought up, was this was rehab.
The Adirondack Bank building,
right.
for those who might not know where you are. This building was, and this, it would have been devastated to knock this building down.
Yeah.
This is a landmark.
They were fortunate enough to find a tenant with the Clarks that had enough of their own businesses to fill this and kind of get the ball rolling. Their argument with the HSBC building at the council meeting the other night was, well, we could rehab it, but who's going to come in and spend $4 million to rehab this building that has no parking? And the city doesn't want to jump in it because look at the mess that happened with the Hotel Utica. So they're very, it's, and they don't want to buy it. They said, no, we're not spending $350,000 to buy this building, because who knows what happened with getting it gutted out. There was a lot of accusations and being thrown around the council chamber the other night, and I was quite surprised to hear, you know, insurance fraud and theft and it, being tossed out. But it's going to be a tricky thing. But I think they, instead of just you know, jumping right on and bulldozing it, they should be looking into some more options. And and Randy Soggs really wants to. His big point for making the parking lot is to attract some tenants for the Harza building.
Yeah, well, there's no question that that has to happen. Yeah. I talked with Randy after after we did an editorial on the HSBC mm-hmm. building initially, and he pointed out that that was the case. And there is no argument that there needs to be parking, because when you have a building like the Harza building, and you're trying to attract tenants that they obviously need a place to park,
right? Yeah,
and that needs to be figured out. But I just think they need to explore some other options for that. The parking garage obviously was going to be the solution. But,
yeah,
but that
pie in the sky parking garage, I like to call it.
That obviously didn't pan out. But there needs to be more of a direction.
Yeah.
And more of a, you know, guidance and as to how they can work that out.
Big changes coming up for the Observer Dispatch. I'm very excited. I personally am excited, and I think it's a great move for you guys. You're going to kind of a new format.
Yeah, I can't speak as well to it as the publisher can, but from what I know about it, it's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a great product. I think the reproduction is going to be like nothing anyone's ever seen before, from the standpoint of what our press could do, and we're looking forward to it. It's going to be an exciting time, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The Observer Dispatch is going to be state of the art now, and the website's going great. You guys, you know, he's really moving over there, really moving. And I want to give a quick plug for Dan Miner, who I think is your finest reporter out there. Dan, you owe me lunch. So we get to sit together at the Common Council meetings, and we're lobbying currently for some new benches at the chambers. Because they go on for so long, Dave. It's like, oh, my goodness. It wears you out. So Operation Sunshine, how can they get involved, and how can, you know, businesses, individuals donate to help send these kids to a great camp?
Well, you can access it on the web at opsun.org. And read about it, and there you can even contribute online that way. We run stories regularly, editorials regularly, on the campaign, how we're doing, and it's really you know, we have some large donors, but the basis, the foundation of the campaign continues to be the good people in the community, and $25, $50, $75, $100 contributions are really what drive the thing.
Yeah.
And they that's what makes it. And the beauty of it is that with donating, and people, you know, people are generous in this community. They really are, as we both know. And they step up for almost every cause that there is, and we meet goal after goal, and in many campaigns, whether it be the Heart Run or cancer drives, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, but or Operation Sunshine for that matter. And the beauty of this particular campaign, Operation Sunshine, is if you donate $100, $100 is used to help send a kid to camp.
Yeah, it's not like $50 goes here, $50 $100 goes to that.
These aren't handouts. These are families that, for whatever reason, of difficult financial means, their children are unable to attend a camp, mm-hmm. or even for a week, even get out of the city for 2 or 3 days, and this allows them. This was all started by Victor Ayer, and Mason Taylor from the Observer Dispatch and Daily Press at one time, years ago. Victor Ayer had been had an editorial this week on this, but Victor Ayer had been a raised in Boston, and his father died when he was fairly young. Mm-hmm. And he became very active at the Boy Scouts and a lot of camping. And he saw the relationships that he was able to build as a young man through the Boy Scouts. And when he became more of means later and rose to be the chief executive of Utica National Insurance Company, he felt that, you know, children of lesser means shouldn't be deprived of that experience.
Yeah.
Because those are your formative years, and those are the times when you can it makes a big difference if you
it
have
does,
these
yeah.
relationships when you're young, and how you're, you know, how you go about forming the way you think, the way you act, the way you work, the way you do everything. So Operation Sunshine began. That was in 1968, and it's been going ever since. But only through the generosity of the people in the community.
Let's keep it going, right? Let's
it's get still these, going.
Yeah, let's do it for and summer camp. I've gone to summer camp when I was a kid. It's one of the unique experiences.
Yeah, kids talk about. That's the thing. Kids go back to school and remember about their summer. It is that 1 week of summer camp. And
I'm sure teachers love reading 16 essays on my summer vacation at summer camp. So excellent, Dave. Thanks so much, Dave DeJack from the Utica OD. It was great seeing you.
And you too, Bart.
I'm hoping to see you more during the winter months.
Yes.
We're still putting something together. We're working on something. So
okay, good.
We'll be there for you, Dave.
Great. Excellent. We appreciate all the work you've done, Mark, for Operation Sunshine through the years, and look forward to more.
I'm plotting stuff in the back of my head, yeah. I haven't told management yet.
Okay.
But we'll be all right. So, Dave, thanks so much for coming in.